need this stuff. Tampa Bay's Tan Talk Radio Network.
The Supreme Court can't seem to make up their minds. Should their rulings be based on strict interpretation of the Constitution or consideration of the consequences of their decisions? They actually have it both ways.
You are about to enter the arena of real news and factual commentary on The Voice of Reason here on the Tan Talk Radio Network. Now, here is your host for today's program, Ed Golley.
And with me today, Gary Gibbons. And Gary, the Supreme Court, whose approval ratings are down about minus 20, I think, they seem to be using conflicting reasons for arriving at the decisions they've been making recently, depending on the political position they want to advance. So it's either strict interpretation of the intent of the founders or consideration of the consequences of their decision. Isn't it supposed to be what's in the Constitution and what the implication it is with respect to liberties and civil rights and freedom and those kind of outdated institutions?
Yeah. And it's originalism is the theory of interpretation of the legal text of the Constitution. And the originalists, like Samuel Alito, for example, believe that the constitutional text ought to be given the original public meaning that it would have had at the time that it became law. So, they take the position that if it's not written in the Constitution, then it's like abortion is not mentioned in the Constitution. Yeah. So he relied upon that to say, oh, well, it's got to be unconstitutional. The dissent by Justice Sotomayor asked the question, but what about the consequences that it's going to have on the people if you take that right away that they've enjoyed for health care for the last 50 years? And, the originalists in that instance didn't want to follow that. They didn't want to think what the consequences were. Mm-hmm. But then you look at other decisions that they've made, and they look at the consequences of them, and they go that way. For example, the decision to put Trump on the ballot,
which overturned the appellate court, federal appellate court,
right? Because they said, "Well, it's going to create chaos, all over the country. So we're not going to allow it." Even though it was a pretty strong case that Colorado had the right to keep them off the ballot.
I mean, that amendment is abundantly clear. Trump tried to implement an insurrection against this nation and overturn the election, the free and fair election. Otherwise, why did he incite all of those people to come to Washington on January 6th? Why did he tell them we're going to go to the Capitol? Why did he tell them you've got to fight for your country or you're going to lose it? Why did he tell them over and over again, I really won the election? It's obvious he was inciting them without literally saying, go to the Capitol and murder Mike Pence if he doesn't do what we want. But that's what he wanted him to do.
Well, I think that, the problem with the Constitution is that it doesn't cover everything. And what we've tried to do as a country for all this time is have people swear an oath of allegiance to the Constitution and then not try to subvert it. And what they were trying to do on January 6th was simply stop the vote from happening, the counting of the electoral votes from happening on that day. Because the Constitution says you have to count the votes on that day. It doesn't say what happens if you can't.
Oh, wow.
And so what happens is it gets thrown into chaos, and the only thing that the Constitution talks about after that is the state electors, the state houses, then would have the opportunity to choose electors. That's what they were trying to do that day, is stop the vote from happening, and there were some people that were smart enough to figure out that we have to get back in there, clean the feces off the wall, and do what we need to do to hold this vote today. And they did that. So, you know, there aren't any guardrails on this thing. And so what January 6th made clear is that if you have bad actors who want to subvert things, there aren't always guardrails up. And a lot of it has been required to, you know, rely upon our system of justice, if you will, is only as good as the people who are involved with it.
Well, isn't that a prospective scenario for how Trump could win the Electoral College again in this year's election? If enough areas, counties, and supervisors in those counties refuse to certify the votes in those counties, it could mean that those particular states, and these would be like purple states or swing states, wouldn't have enough votes to be able to know who really won in that state and how to appoint the electoral votes of that state.
Right.
Which means that then if they couldn't submit them on the proper date, the election then by the 12th Amendment, I believe it is, goes to the House of Representatives, where you have, I think, each state then gets one vote. So that instead of 270 electoral votes, you need to get a majority of the 50 votes. Well, I think it's something like 26 states.
To 23, and then there's one state that splits their electoral votes equally.
Which means he could end up winning the election, even if he lost the popular vote by 12 or 15 million votes.
Yeah.
So that would be an effective strategy for winning the election. The people be damned. An
effective strategy for stealing an election that he always complains about. But that, you know, again, that's why the people are sworn to uphold the oath of the office that they were elected to, so that the supervisor of elections in all of these counties is supposed to do the right thing, damn it.
Yeah.
You know? And if they don't, then, you know, there aren't any immediate guardrails up to say what happens after that. You know, if you don't get all the votes certified and ready to go on January 6th, then, yeah, there's a problem.
So, so as I understand it, there are a lot of Republican supervisors that are already planning to do exactly that if Trump doesn't win their district and cause chaos in the Electoral College so that they can win. Of course, they're going to need to deal with Kamala Harris, because as the vice president, she would be the one that runs the whole operation in the House, right? But nevertheless, if she doesn't have 270 for either one of the candidates, she doesn't really have any choice other than to follow the 12th Amendment,
right?
Which is a very elaborate written and long amendment, goes into great detail about that. But fundamentally, that's what it does to resolve this issue. Now I hear a lot of discussion about separation of powers, okay, and in a lot of incidences it's used to try to assert that the president is immune from liability or being held accountable by the other branches of government. It seems to me that's a very misunderstood term, because it doesn't really mean that. And it's part of the argument, I think, that Trump's attorneys are giving to try to spring him from some of the crimes that he committed as president, to say that as a result of this separation clause, he can essentially do anything he wants as president with complete immunity. Of course, if that was true, there'd be no such thing as an impeachment clause in the Constitution.
Right.
They never would have written that in there.
Right.
So expand on that, if you would, for us. What does it really mean, this separation of powers, and what, if any, protection does it offer, either a corrupt president or a corrupt Supreme Court judge?
Yeah. James Madison was essentially the author of the Constitution, and he and Jefferson in particular were the ones that did most of the the drafting of it. And I saw an exhibit at the Library of Congress one time that was actually rough drafts of the document, where they actually did strike-throughs with their quill pen and inserted other language in there. It's fascinating to see that what those guys were thinking. But they borrowed the concept of the separation of powers from a French author.
I'll be damned.
Who decided, you know, if you don't want to have a monarchy that is complete control of everything, then he laid out this idea of you have three branches of government. You have the judicial branch, the executive branch, and the legislative branch. So the legislative branch passes the laws. The executive branch has a veto power over that, but that veto could be overridden by a supermajority vote of the legislative branch, so there's a check and balance there. And then you have the courts, who then interpret those laws and make decisions on, you know, what it really means.
Or if it's constitutional, or if it's challenged.
Yeah, right? Or how it applies to this particular set of facts when there's a dispute about that. But in the Constitution, there are several places where there are constraints on the absolute power of one of the branches. You know, you mentioned impeachment. That's an opportunity to put a check on the crimes and misdemeanors that a president might commit. Are high crimes and misdemeanors defined in the Constitution? No. It's, you know, whatever the Senate, who is the trier of fact in that situation, decides that is. There are checks and balances with the courts in that the Senate has to approve the nominations of the justices to the Supreme Court or the other federal judges that are appointed. So there's that check and balance there. So, you know, to say that I'm above the law and I can do whatever I want to do is just insane.
Yeah.
It is. And all the commentators that know anything about the Constitution say, you know, this is just absolutely absurd that he's even making these arguments in the highest court of the land. And it's even more absurd that they took the case to essentially as a favor to him to drag the whole proceeding out.
They're really playing the stall card,
sure.
The stall tactic here.
Yeah. His birthday present came early.
Yeah. The concept of a Senate goes back to the Roman Empire, doesn't it? They were simply just lifting that concept from their form of government. So when I hear that this idea of democracy and representative government was first conceived by our founding fathers here, I think, well, wait a minute, they were plagiarizing the Roman Empire, weren't they?
Yeah, they were trying to make it up on the back of a napkin.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, when you get right down to it, they were trying to create something better than what they had in England. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it was an experiment, and it's still an experiment.
Yeah, and of course, sadly, they couldn't foresee every possible problem that could evolve.
No.
So, and a constitution can't be too complicated, otherwise
no.
It just gets bogged down in
no,
and so much detail
and
you can't
right
interpret
to,
that.
The right to bear arms was the Second Amendment is a great example of that.
Mm-hmm.
They talked about a well-regulated militia so that you should be able to have a state militia that could rise up and prevent a king or a president from exerting too much power, and they wanted to make sure that they had the right to have a gun.
Yeah.
Right. Fast forward to 2008, and talking about what you mentioned earlier with the Supreme Court deciding, you know, whether it's in the Constitution or not, an originalist would have said you have the right to have a musket. Okay. You don't have the right to have an AR-15. But, you know, instead, they didn't take the originalist position there. They went, oh, well, wait a minute. Society is advanced, and we have all these technological advances. Let's let everybody have a gun of whatever it is now. Well, come on. Pick one. Which is it? It's convenient for you on one day and not convenient on the next? So.
Yeah, and I think another practical reason was, suppose the city of St. Augustine woke up one morning and saw a fleet of Spanish ships sitting off the coast and realized we're getting ready to be invaded. They couldn't wait for a militia to come down from Washington or the nearest federal facility to defend the city. They had to be able to put together a military on the spot. And if the citizens weren't armed so they could call them into the castle and try to defend the city, they effectively had no way to protect themselves otherwise.
Yeah.
So we don't do that now.
No.
I mean, even if we get drafted, when we show up at the base, the drill sergeant doesn't say, "Let me see your gun, Private Gibbons."
No.
He issues you the weapon.
We've done a real good job with that well-regulated militia part of it. Mm-hmm. You know, because look at our military and all the rules that apply, the military code of justice, and that's been handled. You don't bring your own gun with you. We issue
another issue is in vitro fertilized embryo didn't exist when the Constitution was written. No. And so how can you have a strict interpretation based on the originalist concepts of things that they didn't even have to deal with back then, just like as with the Second Amendment? They need to interpret the current culture that we live in and apply civil liberties to that condition.
And the drafters understood that. They knew that things were going to change in society over time. They were just hoping that, that the people sitting on the court and making the decisions going forward would, interpret it in terms of, perhaps the consequences that are going on. And instead of the originalist, this is just a artifice used by some that want to argue, well, I don't like that, and so I'm going to look to see if it's mentioned in the Constitution, and it's not. So I'm going to say that you can't have that right anymore.
Or it doesn't fit the position of the political party that appointed me, and therefore I'm here to serve their interests, not the interests of the Constitution, as it should be applied to people. So that's that, and the fact that you say that there are certain things that politicians and judges can't not get away with, but they have, through Citizens United, established a court where they can get away with bribery, and they seem unaccountable for that.
Yeah, the Supreme Court has never had it's funny, as a lawyer in Florida, you are subject to being disciplined by the Florida Supreme Court if you violate ethical standards, mm-hmm. right? And most of the lower courts have what's called a judicial conference that have established rules of conduct for judges. The Supreme Court doesn't have those. Until about 6 weeks ago, they passed, their first set of, ethical standards, if you will. But there's no enforcement mechanism other than I've looked at my own, life, and I'm good. Trust me. So that's a problem.
Yeah.
It's clearly a problem when you hear the stories of all the conflicts of interest and the money that's flowing to people and the perks and the trips and the and who's providing those, and then they tend to be litigants in front of the court, Yeah, it doesn't take a genius to put two and two together that, you know, oh, remember that great fishing trip I took you on? Well, yeah. You know, now it's time for my court case to come
up. Well, yeah, and getting back to what you were saying about the original composition of the Constitution, the Founding Fathers understood that changes would be made as time went along, which is why they included the amendment process.
Yeah.
But things that they didn't foresee may have been the longevity of certain judges on the court, partly because they didn't have such long lifespans back then. But there are some ideas being floated now for how to kind of rectify that, whether it's a 20-year term limit for judges or...
Which Congress could do by law. Mm-hmm. They could change the term of federal judges, including the Supreme Court.
But that would require a constitutional amendment there?
No, they could pass a statute.
Oh, they can just do a statute?
Yeah.
Okay.
But, you know, under the current rules in the Senate, you have to have 60, you know, votes to take it out of a filibuster. And, you know.
Sure.
You're not going to do that with a equally divided Senate. You're going to have folks that are going to say, no, we're not going to touch this.
Yeah, we like this.
We like, our packed court.
Exactly.
Thank you very much.
Now, let me ask you about this, Gary. Does it catch your attention that Mike Pence has refused to endorse Donald Trump? Should this suggest something to us? He was the guy's vice president, for crying out loud.
What it suggests to me is that he's been in a coma since January 6th. if the light finally went off, that he shouldn't support this guy who wanted to have him killed.
Yeah.
Essentially sat on his hands while the mob was building gallows outside and had folks inside with zip ties. And we don't know what the Secret Service had planned as part of his quote unquote protection. Remember when they took him down into the basement?
Sure.
And they asked him to get in the car to leave, and he refused to leave?
That
was the smartest thing that he ever did, because we don't know what would have happened then.
That's right.
And my sense is that they wouldn't have brought him back that day to the Capitol, and guess what? Wouldn't have counted the votes, because he's the one that has to count the votes.
He trusted his personal security guard, but he told him, I don't know or trust the driver, so
yeah.
I'm not getting in the car.
Right.
And he didn't.
Yeah. But, you know, he hasn't come out and condemned he hasn't said everything that he thinks was bad about the Trump administration. Yeah, he did some in a book, mm-hmm. You know, showing his true motives, the waiting to, you know, let you buy my book, and then maybe I'll tell you a little bit of something. And he refused to testify to the January 6th committee.
There's a lot of that going on, a lot of people that don't want to testify because they have nothing to hide, right? Navarro just went to the joint, didn't he, over that?
Yeah.
He wouldn't respond to us trying to proclaim presidential immunity, even though he's not the president, and the president wasn't in power when he wanted the immunity. And yet he turns around and says, oh, this is an assault on our liberties and our rights. Bunk. And the apologists for Trump, who used to originally assert after January 6th, we don't know what Trump was doing for those 3 hours. For all we know, he was frantically trying to get some National Guard troops out there or additional police forces to protect the Capitol. So we have to cut him slack and assume that he was probably trying to do that. And then after the testimony at these hearings for the January 6th committee, we heard from witnesses who were there and saw what he was doing.
People like Kevin McCarthy, who were calling him, the White House, were texting his kids, Don Jr., and saying, do something. And even his kids were saying, do something.
Yeah.
And he wouldn't do it.
He was
sitting there having lunch and
watching
and giggling
it on TV and enjoying the violence that was being propagated in his name and in the effort to keep him in power because he was so desperate to retain power. Now those apologists don't have anything to say about it.
Well, now he's changed the frame to say that they're hostages. the ones mm-hmm. that are in jail or hostages. Right. Last time I checked, beating a police officer over the head with a Trump flag is a crime. And with it, beating a police officer with anything is a crime.
And the fact
that the party of law and order wants to hide and say, no, you know, this wasn't. First, they said it was Antifa, right? Mm-hmm. And then when they proved that that wasn't true, then they said, oh, well, you know, it wasn't really all that bad. And it was just a bunch of people that were exercising. It was a protest, you know.
Yeah.
No, you know, it was an armed insurrection trying to you know, thwart what the Constitution provides for counting the votes, which is nothing but a ministerial act at that point. It's what it's supposed to be.
And I am absolutely convinced that he was hoping that maybe some senators would end up being killed or the vice president. Josh Hawley was running around with his pants on fire. He knew how dangerous the situation was after having fist-pumped the protesters. And why do, you know, how many of us walk around with cans of bear spray in our pocket? Those people knew why they were there. They knew what they were going to do.
Right.
And what they didn't know was what to do when they got in the Capitol because there were no politicians there.
Remember, they had the metal detectors up at the Ellipse.
Yeah.
And Cassidy Hutchinson said, you know, there are reports that are, you know, coming in from the Secret Service that there are people out there, a lot of people with guns, you know, and weapons. And Trump said, I don't care. Let them take down the magnetometers and let them come in.
Yeah. And
because they're my people. They're not here to hurt me. You know,
these apologists are just as disingenuous about the comment that Trump made at the rally last Saturday in Dayton, Ohio, when he says China now is building a couple of massive plants where they're going to build electric cars in Mexico, and they think they're going to sell those cars into the United States. No, he says. Let's hear exactly what he said about starting a bloodbath.
We're going to put a 100% tariff on every single car that comes across the line, and you're not going to be able to sell those cars if I get elected. Now, if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath for the whole. That's going to be the least of it. It's going to be a bloodbath for the country. That'll be the least of it.
A bloodbath for the country, not the auto industry.
Right.
What's the question here? He has incited a violent riot in the past, and I think he wouldn't hesitate for a minute to incite another riot if he loses in November. And that's what he's telling us.
Yeah, he's ginning people up. There have been zero votes taken, right? And he's already talking about there's going to be fraud in the election, just like he did last time, just like mm-hmm. he did in 2016. He started talking about it 6 months before the election, before any votes were cast, and he just said, there's going to be fraud. And he repeats it over and over and over, and people start to say, well, yeah, I guess, you know, our elections aren't safe. So, you know, and they can never provide any evidence of that. He had 60-something chances in court to prove that after this the past election and had zero evidence. As Rudy said, well, we have a lot of theories, we just don't have any proof.
Yeah, and of course in Georgia, a couple of his prominent lawyers have pleaded guilty to trying to manipulate that election, right? Sidney Powell and Cheeseborough.
Sure.
They pleaded guilty because they are guilty.
Yeah.
And now he's trying to get that thrown out on a technicality. Gee, if he's so innocent, why doesn't he go to court and show us?
Yeah.
But he doesn't. We can all hear the call. We all know what he said to Raffensperger. We all know he was trying to shake him down. We all know he threatened him. But the apologists just sweep it under the rug and say, no, he was just questioning it. But he doesn't have any business questioning it in the first place.
No.
None.
No, the states are supposed to count the votes without interference from one of the candidates who's talking about, well, this could really get you into a lot of criminal problems if this isn't handled the right way. And, hey, I just need 11,780 votes. Come on. I know we had more than that.
I mean, it clearly shows contempt for our whole election system, and nothing has changed in this cycle.
No, if anything, it's going to be worse.
Not even the campaign promises. We're going to take a quick time out here for some important messages. Ed Golly with Gary Gibbons on The Voice of Reason. And when we return, we'll talk about some of those campaign promises and see if it sounds like deja vu all over again.
Service company, from trimming, pruning, fertilizing, and insect control to grinding and removal, you get an experienced ISA certified and veteran owned firm that can do any tree job, large or small. With our fully equipped fleet and trained crew members, we care for trees of all sizes, whether you're government, contractor, business, or homeowner. Don't trust just anyone with a chainsaw. Call Arbor Life Tree Service at 727-330-1999 for a quick and free estimate. That's 727-330-1999. Arbor Life Tree Service. They go out on a limb for you.
You're listening to the Voice of Reason on the TAN Talk Radio Network.
This April 9th to the 14th, join us in Lakeland at Sun and Fun's biggest event ever. Discover a jam-packed lineup of special events all week long. Dazzling air shows and hundreds of exhibits are waiting for you. And don't miss a once-in-a-lifetime concert by Dylan Scott.
I need one she ain't climbed up in that ain't played her favorite songs.
With special guest Sarah Evans on opening night Tuesday, April 9th at 6 p.m. Witness the Thunderbirds soar through the afternoon sky as you explore more than 500 exhibitions. Watch mesmerizing fireworks shows on Wednesday and Saturday night and more. Get ready for an immersive experience for the whole family. And don't forget, you can bring kids under 10 for free. Whether you stay for a day or all week, take fun to new heights this April. Don't miss out on Sun and Fun 2024. Get tickets and a guaranteed parking pass at flysnf.org. That's flysnf.org.
Don't turn it off now. You need this stuff. Tampa Bay's TAN Talk Radio Network.
It's 10:37, and we don't take phone calls, but we do accept emails. So if you have any comments on The Voice of Reason, you may reach us by email at WTANvoice, all one word, WTANvoice@AOL.com. Ed Golly with Gary Gibbons on The Voice of Reason, and it's time now for Poll Watch, where we look at some of the numbers from the pollsters that affect the world we live in today. Currently, Gary, 61% say abortion should be legal in all or most cases, while 37% say it should be illegal in all or most cases. Now, that's an NPR, PBS NewsHour poll that came up with those numbers, and they're relatively unchanged since the Dobbs decision over the time that states, the red states, have implemented abortion restrictions. So we don't see the nation starting to lean toward embracing this idea. A third of Republicans also qualify themselves as mostly supporting abortion rights, which is not an insignificant share in a party that's made opposition to abortion rights a litmus test for political candidates. And yet, despite the majority support for abortion rights, generally, 66% said abortion should be legal in, at most, the first 3 months of a pregnancy. So that's about 13 to 15 weeks. 66%. Almost 9 in 10 Republicans and 3/4 of independents want to see abortion restricted to 3 months or less. A majority of Democrats favor a longer window, but even 42% of Democrats want to see it limited. So this is the argument that Trump is making, that because he came into power and put stacked the three judges on the court who were very conservative and used the Bible instead of the Constitution to determine what our rights are in this country, he says now he has brought this to the negotiating table. And he says that he's leaning now toward a 15-week national ban, but supports exceptions for rape, incest, saving the life of the mother, because he says you got to win elections. Abortion still promises to be a very galvanizing issue in this election. Between that and the border, I don't know which would be the more prominent issue. But remember, just as an aside, it's not Biden who's causing the problems at the border. It's the Republicans who refuse to pass the bill to address it because Trump wants it to remain an active issue in the campaign. He doesn't want the border addressed now or resolved because he wants to campaign on that, because he sure as heck doesn't want to campaign on abortion.
Yeah, that's the only issue that he's got. He can't talk about the economy because it's better than when he was in office. And he can't make that argument. And it'll be interesting to see if he files bankruptcy between now and Monday. Uh-huh. Chapter 11 would be my guess. But I bet he's going to file something because when you file bankruptcy, there's something called an automatic stay that prevents any enforcement of any judgments against you. So if he wants to try to stop Patricia James from levying on his stuff, he may do that between now and Monday. I just put that in and as a side. Yeah. I don't know what that's going to do for him in terms of his popularity, because people really don't. He's already filed bankruptcy a bunch of times, but I digress.
Well, yeah, because going back to the abortion issue, fundamentally, I think what most Americans want is for politicians to stay out of their doctor's offices.
Sure, it's health care. Yeah, it is health care. Ask a woman. You know, there was a senator in Arizona who got up on the floor this week and said, you know, I have had multiple miscarriages during my life. Mm-hmm. I was lucky to have two children born. And I found out recently that I'm pregnant. And because of the genetic testing that's now available, they have determined that I cannot carry this child to term. I'm going to have a miscarriage. It's going to happen. And so, but because of the restrictive laws that had been passed in that state, she couldn't have the abortion there. She had to leave, and she had it yesterday.
Yeah. Wow.
And it was, you know, she said, it's either I make it in a place and a time that's safe and that I know it's going to be done properly, or I could risk bleeding out when it happens and I don't know where I'm going to be or when it's going to happen. It's health care. Mm-hmm. It's health care. And for anybody to mention the term abortion without saying abortion health care, then you're missing the point.
Yeah. And I think the majority of Americans were perfectly content with their freedom and their liberty to make their own decisions about that. But now in a lot of these red states, what they want is the moment of conception, your body belongs to the state. And what kind of freedom is that?
Yeah.
You know, what kind of liberty is that?
Well, you talk about the unintended consequences of things. After the decision was made in Alabama to say that personhood begins at the time of you're an embryo, there are people that have been accused of statutory rape who are now arguing that there's a 9-month difference in the age of the victim. You need to go back 9 months earlier. And oh, by the way, she was now old enough to have sex with me, and so therefore I'm not guilty. Again, is that something that we want to have happen? You know, yeah. To have somebody who was 15 and 9 months, or yeah. Anyway,
yeah, that, are you a legal
again,
citizen
the
when
unintended consequences
born?
Of saying that is when life begins.
It wasn't broke, so they had to fix it. And quickly, before we get to the promises, the House Oversight Committee held that hearing yesterday in the GOP impeachment inquiry into Joe Biden that featured Hunter Biden's former business partners. And what was the most interesting to me was Rudy Giuliani's associate, Lev Parnas, who is a Ukrainian-American businessman who worked closely with former Trump attorney Giuliani in 2018 and 19 to try to find damaging information on Biden. And he began his opening statement by slamming Trump and his associates for pushing what Parnas said were false claims against the Biden family. And this is what he said, quote, "The American people have been lied to by Donald Trump, Rudy Giuliani, and various cohorts of individuals in government and media positions. They created falsehoods to serve their own interests, knowing it would undermine the strength of our nation." Did you see the one representative who challenged the chairman to make a motion to impeach Biden? He says, "I will second it." And he just paused and looked at him and said, "Go ahead and make the motion." And nothing happened, of course, because they don't have any evidence for it, and they know they don't have the votes to do it. But the whole thing is just the typical conservative lie. Just keep saying he's corrupt. Keep conducting the hearings. Keep claiming we're searching for the evidence, and we'll find it if you give us enough time. Like we're still searching for the nuclear weapons in Iraq, I guess, right?
Right.
And the whole thing is one big, giant sham that's designed to create the illusion that Biden and his family are corrupt, barring any evidence of it. Let's look at some of Trump's campaign promises. Well, he is making immigration and the border his central campaign issue. He wants to use the Alien Enemies Act to remove known or suspected gang members, drug dealers, or cartel members from the United States, and also promised to carry out the largest domestic deportation operation in American history. That's just an unfathomable project, to go around and just to start rounding up people and deporting them. I mean, I get that the idea is they aren't supposed to be here, but if they're here and they're working, or they're buying a single wide or a car or whatever, and when all of a sudden all these jobs are going to be vacant.
The jobs that Americans typically don't want to do.
Or you don't want to pay American wages to do it. I mean, I think Americans will do any job, but you got to pay them for it. And you've got to pay an American's Social Security. You've got to match it. You've got to pay his FICA and give him a couple of sick days and paid vacation and so on. And so it just costs a lot to hire an American worker, and especially with minimum wages going up. Whereas if a company can hire illegals, I mean, exploitation of labor is one of the fundamental foundations of the history of our economy, right?
Right.
It started out with zero payment for the labor, and that was called slavery. And then, of course, we exploited the immigrants coming over from Western Europe, and now we're exploiting the immigrant labor from everywhere.
Well, they wouldn't stay if they couldn't be hired and make money here to live on and or send back home.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I've said for years, all you have to do is start putting the employers in jail for hiring the illegal people. And boy, that would stop immediately.
Exactly. If you need a case where you need to consider the consequences of your actions more than just the basic legitimacy of the action, I can't think of a better case or cause than that. In healthcare last November, Trump promised to replace the Affordable Care Act, known colloquially as Obamacare. He said getting much better health care than Obamacare for the American people will be a priority of the Trump administration. It's a matter of health, he says, not cost. America will have one of the best health care plans anywhere in the world. Right now it has one of the worst. Am I having deja vu here?
There's an echo in here. It is what it is. It keeps, just repeating. But the bottom line is he didn't do any of these last time. He's not going to do any of them this time. There's only one reason why he's running, and that's to stay out of jail.
And so by making these fantastic promises, he figured, they swallowed it in 2016.
Yeah.
Just serving the same Kool-Aid.
He wants to get in there and put his sycophants in charge of everything at the Justice Department and then say, all right, we're done. You know, dismiss these cases.
And speaking of the justice system, he's promised to use the Department of Justice to attack critics and former allies. Think about that. If what's her name, Nicole Wallace, comes on and says the president has ignored his promise to give us better health care, she may not show up for work the next day.
Mike Pence got to be in the crosshairs, don't you think?
Exactly. I mean, is this what we want in America?
For
people who criticize the president to be prosecuted arrested or harassed?
Turn us into a third world country is what it'll do, because you're going to end up, you know, prosecuting your political enemies, and then you become a banana republic overnight.
Here's a quote from him. I will appoint a real special prosecutor to go after the most corrupt president in the history of the United States of America, Joe Biden, and the entire Biden crime family. I will totally obliterate this deep state. Well, that's what's going on right now. They're investigating.
Yeah, and they can't find anything. So where's the crime family other than in his name calling?
And, you know, wasn't that the same promise he made about Billary? He was going to appoint a special prosecutor. He constantly called her crooked and corrupt and then didn't do anything. Why? Because she had been subjected to, I think, what was the most extensive investigation by the Senate in the history of the country over the Benghazi issue.
Yep.
In an effort to derail her presumed presidential campaign, they couldn't come up with anything to charge her with.
Yeah.
And he knew a prosecutor wouldn't be able to either.
And remember with that, Kevin McCarthy made the mistake of actually speaking in public saying, you know, we formed this Benghazi thing for political purposes, and it worked.
Mm-hmm. It sure did.
You know, she lost the election. So, you know, we threw enough mud against the wall to see if anything would stick, and enough of it stuck that she lost. Well, she won the popular vote.
On the issue of crime, Trump says he, quote, will not hesitate to send in federal law enforcement to our cities to restore peace and public safety, adding he would instruct the Department of Justice to open civil rights investigations into radical left prosecutors' offices that engaged in racial enforcement of the law, encouraged Congress to use their legal authority over Washington, D.C. to restore law and order and overhaul federal standards of disciplining minors to address rising crimes like carjackings. But curiously, the crime rate is actually increasing in the red states and decreasing in the blue cities, other than the fact that the National Guard has to patrol the subway system in New York. I mean, that's probably still a challenging endeavor to take a subway ride, but the murder rates are falling and crime rates are lowering in the cities. And I think, wouldn't you agree, that that's partly because of the improvement of the economy? It's easier to get a job.
Yeah.
And if you don't have to risk going to jail to have an income, you'd probably prefer to do that.
Yeah. But again, it's all saying that crime is out of control and having, without having any facts to support it, or cherry picking things here and there to try to say that, is just to stoke fear and to try to get the electorate to be scared enough to get out there and vote. And then he doubles down and says, well, if they're coming after me, they're coming after you. Mm-hmm. And no, not unless you've defrauded a bank.
Yeah, exactly. On trade, Trump pledges to impose stiff penalties on China and other trade abusers. Well, really, he's talking tariffs here. Under his proposed Trump Reciprocal Trade Act, he said if other countries impose tariffs on the U.S., this country will impose a reciprocal identical trade tariff right back. The goal getting to get other countries to drop their tariffs. Well, that's what happened with the soybean incident when he was president.
Yep.
When he imposed tariffs on China, they turned around and their government imposed a tariff on U.S. grown soybeans. So the soybean buyers went to Brazil and stuck the farmers with a bunch of soybeans they couldn't peddle, meaning the federal government had to go in and bail them out to the tune of, I think, $12.5 billion.
Yeah. Congress, his tariffs were a complete disaster. All they did was raise prices for the consumers, screw up the supply chain, like you mentioned, for the and cause bailouts that Congress had to do to try to fix it.
Yeah.
And he is no genius when it comes to the economy or running a business or anything else. He's just a fraudster, and he's always been that. And you know, if he said under oath recently, he had more than $400 million in cash. Well, that's about what he needs to come up with now if he wants to post this bond. And more than 30 bonding companies turned him down.
Mm-hmm.
What does that tell you about, you know, you have to disclose what your assets are and what's available that they could actually
attach
if you didn't come up with the money that you're supposed to pay? And none of them said, we're on board with that.
Mm-hmm. Even with the RNC behind him, that he can suck money out of that. Now he's going to have a fundraiser, $200,000 ahead, and if you want to be a sponsor, a chairman, 850,000 balloons, U.S. currency only.
I saw recently where his small dollar donors are not contributing like they used to. He's gone to the well way too many times, mm-hmm. and he spent the money on his legal fees instead of getting people elected, which is why they gave the money in the first place. So it's going to be interesting to see that, you know, if the having his daughter-in-law in charge of the RNC is going to really help or not. I mean, she's just going to siphon all the money to him. She's already said that. He said it's all going to go to elect the top of the ticket.
The sad part to me is that he's taking it from the lower income Americans who need the money, and they're donating it with the best of intentions. They really believe he can seal the border and eliminate inflation and give us cheap fuel and lots of guns. He can't do any of that. On the economy, he has promised to extend the cuts from his 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, notably the individual income tax breaks, and has also talked about reducing the corporate tax rate from the current 21% to 15%. Well, now at the same time, our budget, I think this year, is $7.2 trillion, and we take in less than $5 trillion. Through taxation, cutting those taxes is only going to increase the deficit.
Put it on the credit card. That's what Republicans do when they're in charge. They cut taxes, put it on the credit card, and wait for the Democrats to come in and fix it.
Yeah, and then complain that there's too much deficit spending. I mean, there are certain fundamentals to running a government. That means you need to pay for that
pay as you go, right?
Yeah,
hadn't happened since Reagan.
So yeah, it's great to have tax cuts, but what are the consequences? More and more debt until it becomes virtually just insurmountable, and then the only option becomes, printing money and triggering hyperinflation. He doesn't know or care anything about that.
No.
He just wants to be able to say, I cut taxes. Well, what part of government are you cutting to pay for that? No, well, nothing. That's not going to work too well. Anyway, they do have a strange familiarity to them, don't they?
Deja vu all over again.
Here's our quote for today. It's from Ava Gabor. You remember her. She played Eddie Albert's wife, Lisa Douglas, on Green Acres. She said, love is a game that two can play and both win. Ava Gabor was divorced 5 times. Tomorrow morning at 10 a.m., be here for Paul Molloy. He hosts Freedom Works. And up next, following national news from CBS, will be Joy on Paper with your host, Patsy with a Z. Hope you join us again next Thursday. Be here for another edition of The Voice of Reason. Now, along with Gary Gibbons, I'm Ed Golly reminding you, if the statement seems a little too implausible to be true, don't believe it. Just because a conservative said it,
make them prove it.
WTAN Clearwater.
FM 106.1.
WDCF Dade City.
FM 102.3.
Listen.
This is CBS News.